we are going to undertake the ceremony for taking the aspiration bodhicitta. So imagine where behind me the image of the Bodhisakyamuni. So imagine that there is a living Bodhisakyamuni having possession the 32 major marks and the 80 minor marks, and endowed with the great sense of bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness. And then imagine that he's while in his action of actually teaching, giving teachings, discourses to us, imagine that he's just living a Buddha. And then surround and the figures like Maitreya and Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, and other great bodhisattvas like Vajrapani and so forth surrounding him. And then imagine being surrounded also by Nagarjuna, Aryadeva, Asanga, Vasubandhu, and also by Dignaka, Asanga, and along with his followers. And Adisha Divankara, along with his all our following lineages, the figures involved in these. And then also Shantideva, and then his following, students or the followers in this lineage of the vast conduct. And then the traditions that followed, or the lineages that followed from Atisha, which we call the Kadamba tradition. And then all the traditions, all the followers of Lama Tsongkhapa, the lineages which comprise of primarily three, which makes three: the extensive learning, the conduct, and the Lamrim lineage. One which is traceable from Khyentse Rinpoche, another traceable from Jujun Sherpa Tsingkhe. So here we are referring to the lineages that are available in the higher tantric, lower tantric teachings and the higher tantric teachings. And since that those now here among the audience, so the most of them you are actually from Chinese origin, and you imagine all the great masters of the ancient Chinese traditions also. And since that all those great beings, they have generated this altruistic intention of bodhicitta just for the sake of the other sentient beings, including ourselves here. And the power of bodhicitta, the power of compassion, and the power of potential that they have generated, they are just for the sake of us. It is because of this that all those great beings, thinking is actually already directed or intended towards or focused on this very occasion, the event that we are going to hold here. And then imagine all other sentient beings. Imagine all the other sentient beings in the aspect of their own suffering nature. All the sentient beings surrounding you. And on that basis, imagine that now I'll be really generating such a mind to benefit all other sentient beings who are being tormented by their respective sufferings. And on that basis, you imagine that, I'm going to generate that mind of enlightenment for to liberate all beings from samsara. So since that the kind of the stains or the obscurations that we already have they are kind of obscuration to generating this mind of enlightenment. As such, we are going to, first of all, make confession of these downfalls or the demerits that we have accumulated. And then next, as a kind of conducive factor, we need to have accumulated enormous merit in order to make this generation of bodhicitta possible. So in this relation, there's a tradition of saying the seven puja to accumulate merit. And that also should be actually motivated by the intention to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So with this kind of attitude, you make sure that we say the seven puja for the accumulated merit, in order to let this generation of the bodhicitta very fruitful and conducive. And then after the seven puja, so after that, then the usual stanza that you say of the prayers. So just as we normally have the kind of prayer, making supplication in relation to three main points. So in relation to the stanza that you normally say, so think of the, first of all, imagining that you proliferate whatever virtues that you've accumulated, proliferating this bodhicitta first. And second, that any kind of hindrances which may be there to obstruct someone from generating bodhicitta, so imagine that they are eradicated. So which is very clearly stated in that stanza, that there are three types of hindrances and all inflicted emotions be dispelled. And then last point, that is through reflecting on the proper or the valid reasonings, so all those virtuous realizations starting from the proper generation of guru devotion, and then reflection on impermanence and so forth. So all those wisdom aspects, may they be proliferated or multiplied. And that line which says, may we be able to always engage in the ways of life of Bodhisattva from life to life. So here, imagine that, I'm going to hold this Bodhisattva vow, so from today onwards. So make sure that this stanza of a prayer, make sure that you be very emphatic and very powerfully or moved through saying this stanza. Make offerings to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the best offerings that you can think of. And the third one, make confession. Confession of the negativities that one has accumulated since the beginning of this time. And the next, rejoicing. Rejoicing of the virtues that one and all the other sentient beings have accumulated. And next, making supplication or the request that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas don't assume the passing away, that they remain with all the sentient beings until all sentient beings achieve full enlightenment. And the last one is dedicating whatever merit that one has accumulated through performing these seven puja, be dedicated towards achieving Buddhahood for oneself and for all others, and for dedicating the merit to achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all other sentient beings. So this comprises the seven puja. Since I've missed one, requesting the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to continue to give teachings to the beings, that they actually start seeing or actually obtain the wisdom to liberate themselves from samsara to the ultimate state of enlightenment. To the Buddha made by Nagarjuna in his root wisdom. So this last line that you said in the prayer, this one stanza prayer, may we be able to always engage in the ways of life of Bodhisattva from life to life. So it says that, so whatever kind of action that you may do, you may be engaged in, as long as that is complemented or associated with the mind of enlightenment, so the return of to be Bodhisattva deed. And whereas if that is not complemented or associated by the wisdom of the Bodhicitta, the altruistic mind of enlightenment, so however powerful a wisdom of emptiness may help associate those actions, they won't be your actions won't be classified as the Bodhisattva actions. So, as such, we have to make the commitment, we have to make the kind of resolve that very soon I'm going to be able to engage in those actions the way the great Bodhisattvas they are engaging in through by way of actually developing or generating this powerful wisdom of this powerful intention of Bodhicitta, the desire to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And the third line of the same stanza, may all the negative karma and obscurations eliminated. So this obscuration, it can be referred to two types, one external obscuration and other internal obscuration. So that kind of agent which has the capacity to overcome any kind of obscurations would be that altruism, that sense of compassion, love, which works, which has the intention to work for the welfare of all sentient beings. If you are in possession of this attitude, so no wonder whatever obscurations, whether external or internal, can have no room or can have no capacity to actually obscure or be of any obstacle to you. And the second line, which says, may we be able to develop genuine wisdom. So although there are various ways of developing the wisdom belonging to the all three kinds of the teachings in common to the lower scope, middle scope, and the great scope. But in order for that wisdom to combat or be the remedy to the subtlest of the obscuration to perfect knowledge, so it must be that wisdom must be something which is associated or complemented by the altruistic bodhicitta, the compassionate mind of enlightenment. So, in order to derive the ultimate wisdom, the wisdom which has the capacity to lead someone to achieve full enlightenment by way of eradicating the subtleness of the imprints, would be that wisdom of emptiness associated or complemented by the mind of the altruistic enlightenment, the mind of awakening mind of enlightenment. And the kind of wisdom that is referred to here in the second line refers to that wisdom associated by the wisdom of the Bodhicitta. And then the first line, may the three types of hindrances and of all afflictive emotions be dispelled. So here, this line refers to eradicating or dispelling all emotions along with the subtlest of the imprints, and not just the afflictive emotions. So the subtlest of the afflictive emotions, the imprints of the emotions, which are responsible for hindering someone to achieve full enlightenment. So in short, all these lines reveal the fact that we are to aspire to achieve this mind of enlightenment. And how to do that? So actually that is to be done by way of one's own training, constant training, constancy in the training. So while so doing, it may even take you many years or even many kalpas or many aeons to really fulfill this desire to achieve this bodhicitta. So if one is very lucky or very fortunate, so there's a possibility that one can actually achieve this bodhicitta within this life alone. Otherwise, it may even take some eons. But even if it takes eons for one to generate bodhicitta, but what else is there to do other than generating this bodhicitta? So if somebody she is not involved in generating bodhicitta, so for Kalpans, for aeons and aeons, if he or she remains like that, so then the only thing that is bound to occur to him or her is that he or she will be constantly tormented by suffering and sense of uneasiness, disturbances. And whereas even if the bodhicitta is not achieved within this lifetime, and yet if you strive to achieve that, and even if it takes aeons, the thing is that you'll constantly, all the time, you'll have a peaceful state of mind. So it is said in the precious garden by Nagarjuna, and also Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. So where they say that even if the time is so short, but you have been tormented by a mental disturbance, you'll find that that time, that very brief instant of time, is too long for you. You experience that to be so long. And whereas if you really feel something very joyous through generating bodhicitta and striving in bodhicitta, however long the time may be, even it be eon, you'll feel it so brief an instant of time. And we, through engaging in the very teachings of the Buddha Shakyamuni, and then really trying to emulate in terms of the actions, the Buddha's own actions of the physical, verbal, and the mental, and also then emulating the actions of the great masters like Nagarjuna and so forth. And then we will also obtain the opportunity to reflect on the marvelous teachings of the Buddhas and all study these teachings, reflect on these teachings, and then also meditate on the content matter of these teachings. So this being so, it is our responsibility not to waste even a single instant of time. Because what we are doing is something so precious. There is nothing more precious than what we are doing right now. Although we are right now in samsara, and while we are in the midst of the environment of samsara, environment of delusion and negative karma, but the kind of action that we are engaging is something so worthwhile that there is nothing, no other action can really surpass what we are doing right now. Generating bodhicitta, engaging the study, reflection, and meditation on these marvelous teachings.